Morning, everybody. This is News Radio 94.9 890 KDXU. It's Wednesday and time for Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care Show. Here's Richard and Kaylee.
This is Elder Care Radio, and welcome to this rather warm Wednesday morning.
Rather warm.
And it's going to keep there for a while. So this is the other part of the year that we get to enjoy, the part where we really get to see what God has done with the sun.
And the part we put up with so that we don't have snow on the ground in May.
I mean, you could be in Wisconsin where you're thinking, okay, so for 3 months of sun, we got to deal with 9 months of winter. Here, we deal with 3 months of sun so that we can have 9 months of glory.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Right.
So it is great, and we are glad to be here, and we're glad you're here with us. So last week we talked a little bit about palliative care. We kind of went through and explained that, and we posed the question, what is your palliative? And we asked people to call in and let us know what their palliative was, and we appreciate the calls we got, and we certainly hope that there are more this week, that people will call us and let us know. The reason is because we'd like to have more ideas. I mean, I understand the things that appeal to me, and I sometimes get right what appeals to my wife, but we don't know what appeals to everybody. And so if we can get more people involved and get a broader range, then we'll have a better starting point of having that conversation.
I kind of feel like this is a good place to interject and kind of summarize again what palliative is. So palliative, by definition, Richard?
Is anything or everything that we can do that eliminates a symptom or relieves a problem but may not actually cure the underlying issue.
So non-curative, but brings a higher quality of life. And we have scientific evidence that in lowering stress and improving the quality of somebody's life actually extends their life. So that being said, I would just, before we really get going on, you know, the phone calls that came in, one of the things that I thought was kind of interesting is we have had a few of our competitors reach out to the community in flyers and things, almost trying to capitalize on palliative, which is fine. That's fine.
I mean, we want everybody to change their mode.
We do. But most people still believe that palliative is just that waiting period between somebody being eligible but not accepting their eligibility into the hospice with the palliative program. So it's just kind of, hey, we'll be your friend. We'll support you. We'll charge you for your services while you wait. That's not really what Medicare intended palliative to be.
We'll charge you for the same level of services that we would normally provide.
For free.
In hospice.
Through
Medicare. But our goal for everybody understanding what palliative is that palliative is so much more. It's not just we do one thing that should help some people improve some part of their life, but we want to do whatever it is that is best effective for you. And that's really why we're posing that question of what is your palliative? Because I could say that, and in fact, we had a call in and tell us what their palliative was. And I thought this was exactly right. We all know that music therapy is a great tool to relieve some stress for some people. But I got a call from a lady who said, my palliative is opera. You know, extremely specific, because that's the kind of music that really,
you either like it or you don't.
Yeah, but for her, it's meaningful. That's what makes her appreciate music, and I appreciate that.
It takes her to a beautiful place, and it relaxes her and lowers her stress, so that is definitely her palliative.
And we could probably pick other types of music, each and every one of us, that say, oh, no, not that music.
Can I just take one more moment to kind of give a visual contemplation or a thought to what palliative is? So many years ago, when babies were born premature and they would be in the NICU, parents were required to reach through and hold their babies in the incubators through these very thick, big gloves, which really didn't offer them the close love and support of their parents. Well, they realized scientific evidence proved that actually if you bring them out of the incubator and hold them close to your chest, that their time in the hospital was reduced, the amount of operations and procedures that they required were less, they required less medications, and their success rate or their ability to overcome their challenges increased and their time in the hospital decreased, but their likelihood of survival increased. So that is scientific evidence. There is scientific evidence that cuddling helps. So in fact, they changed and added a cuddling program where beautiful volunteers, usually grandmotherly type and seniors because they tend to have a little extra time, can volunteer and come into the hospital and hold your babies when you're not there, because the improvement is absolutely undeniable, scientifically evidenced. So the palliative program for seniors is a little different, because by the time we're a senior, we've had life experiences and we've formed opinions and we have choices. So that makes it far more dynamic, but it's the same. How does your palliative translate from the cuddling programs of infants into what your palliative would be as a senior adult? It's very dynamic, and it would be very difficult to write in a brochure everything that we do, because we create a palliative program alongside of you based on your desires, your loves, your interests, and what would be important to you to reduce your fears, anxieties, stresses, your day-to-day workload, increase your quality of life and improve your everyday experience. So that's really what palliative is, a little bit more expanded than a simple definition. So we had asked what your palliative is, and that's what we mean by that, because it's so dynamic.
Right, and we actually really want that feedback from the community, and we are starting to put up some billboards that are going to just say, what's your palliative? Look for those. Let us know if you see them. There'll be those digital billboards around town. We're just going to see if that means anything to anybody else and where we're at with that. But going back to, what that possible palliative is, we got a call from somebody who said, well, family would be my palliative. And I had the opportunity to say, okay, so what about family? Let's go through some examples. Would it be just a big family dinner where everybody's sitting around a table? Would that be palliative? And yes, it might be. But is that the only thing that could be? Or is it a child or grandchild sitting on your lap for some time? Would it be having this really big family get-together, like a reunion? Would that be palliative? And I think for many of us, it would. But each of these is a little different, because I imagine, okay, so you have this big, get-together, and you're housing all these people, and at some point in the week, it's going to get a little tight and frustrating. So it's just a matter of your own personal choices. So that's really, what's the most effective palliative for you is the important thing. In fact, we had a patient who mentioned something kind of along those lines.
Right. We actually had a patient that listened to our program and said, hey, I heard you today and you asked what my palliative was. And you guys come in here and you offer so many services. But I will tell you, it's the most simple thing. It's having all my family around me, my grandchildren climbing on the bed and playing with my hair and doing my makeup, no matter how outrageous a three-year-old can do your makeup, and painting my fingernails, every color that imaginable. It's just having my grandkids crawl all over me and love on me. And I thought, oh my gosh, you and I have a lot in common, because I think I would be like my mom. My mom's true palliative was telling stories about each one of her kids and having all of her kids there. Mm-hmm. In fact, the day before my mother passed, my entire family was around her in the room, and she was sitting up, and we were all laughing about, childhood stories. And I did not appreciate the ones where she made it sound like I was a difficult teenager, because that was a falsehood.
That's right. But so let's just have a different perspective on
my
life.
My dad said the same thing, by the way.
Well, they probably teamed up. They probably
they did.
I'm sure it's all fiction.
It was.
It was all fiction, as most jokes are. So what we really hope with this is that the community is just going to take some time today. If you guys listening in the audience would take some time today and actually contemplate what your palliative would be and share that, because I think that's a great thing. And if you... if you have an opportunity to talk to a neighbor, that might be a good question to ask them. So what's your palliative? Give them an explanation of what it is. And we just talk about great things. We've had, plenty of time here to be talking about miserable things. And the whole world seems to be divided on two sides of every argument. I don't think this is one that there's two sides to. And so it'd be great to get in and kind of talk about that a little bit and just be able to share with your family what your palliative is, find out what theirs is. And then we don't have to wait for anything to apply that. Andy, your palliative is food. You don't have to wait for 6-8 months before you have any food, right?
And Hawaii, too.
Oh, food in Hawaii.
Ooh. Okay. I don't know if we could bring Hawaii into your bedroom.
Wait, well, I need a little sand and a pineapple.
Yeah. Okay. If your wife's willing, okay. I will pour sand all over your carpet and put a palm tree in the corner.
We will schedule that for this weekend.
Okay. Hula dancers.
So, but again, everybody, if you just really think about it and say, okay, so these would be the things that really make me happy and make that list and share those with family and friends and get their list, I think it would be, you know, great.
It's kind of fun.
And if you're willing to do that, please call and share them with us. If you will, then we have a better broad perspective on what it could be. And if you're willing to allow us, we will share them with the listeners on the radio.
We love adding ideas to our plethora list of things that we like to, you know, suggest to people. And as that evolves, then we're, you know, able to reach more people and give them ideas of what might be important to them to reduce stress and increase their quality of life.
Right, because most of us never think about what's important to me. But if you know, having a conversation and we can start giving some suggestions, maybe it'll trigger a thought and then say, oh, well, yeah, that would be interesting. You know, I think at least a couple of my kids would say brownies would be palliative for them.
Every day.
You know, that I think that would be the case. And so if it was going to be a special occasion and we really wanted to treat them well, which may happen sometime in the future, who knows, then brownies may be on the list. But if I didn't know that, then it would never happen. And so that's where sharing is going to help there. So we hope this really takes off and then everybody, you know, starts thinking about it and coming up with it. So
okay, another hot topic issue.
Oh, man, hot topic.
We've had a lot of calls asking about this.
Aducanumab.
Aducanumab. Come on,
no, I
Andy.
Cannot. I don't know what that means. You're going to have to educate me.
So aducanumab is the new Alzheimer's med.
Oh, right. I heard about that. Okay.
Yes.
And if you've heard anything, you've heard one of two things. Mm-hmm. Either, oh, my gosh, this is great.
Or
the FDA is, you know, sold out and we can't ever trust them again.
Yeah.
Those seem to be the two narratives when it comes to this this new drug. And the truth is somewhere in the middle.
And it's so interesting. We get calls all the time. As soon as that hit the radio, we literally had phone calls of family members and people who are not on service that said, can I get it? Is it available? And, of course, you know, no, everything takes a little bit of time. You can't get the drug right now. But you should also decide if it's right for you. You have to understand the drug.
Yeah, so we kind of want to cover some of this today, knowing that there are a lot of sources for information, but almost every source that you have that you're going to get anything from is going to have an agenda behind it. Okay, and so what we hope we're going to do is address that and talk about how to really get good information, because we are big believers. Our recommendation is to be your own best medical advocate. That's always going to be our watchword. And the only way to be your best medical advocate is to get good, solid information, not just listen to one side or the other of the argument. Because, again, the truth is always somewhere in the middle. So that's what we're really hoping for.
Is it Medicare approved, Richard?
No. At this point, it is not Medicare approved. But
go ahead.
Oh, it may be at some point. There's a lot of questions that people are having, and we'd like to answer those. But we just want to make sure that we start this conversation with a goal, because we also have a goal here in talking about it, of getting people to look for themselves, to have a better understanding for their own medical care instead of just depending on some article that you may read. Okay, so there are sources for information that you can get that'll give you a good background on it. So, no, it's not Medicare approved at this point.
And one of the reasons could be the cost. What's it going to cost?
Right now, the proposed price is $56,000 a year.
And that will have the largest impact on Medicare, since most of Alzheimer's is later ages. And
that's right.
It progresses as we age. And so more often than not, it's going to be a Medicare expense. And at $56,000 a year.
Per person.
They are trying to, you know, determine and wage in whether or not there truly is a benefit. They're looking at it slightly different, but they're a little pressured based on the FDA. And all that information's available. You know, on Medicare has a blog on it. AARP wrote some information on it. Of course, the FDA has some information on it. So you can do your research and determine if it's right for you. But
As we're going through this, I think we want to break this down. First, we're going to talk about the hoopla, about the studies, and about, you know, the FDA making their decision and all the rest of it, and the two sides making this argument about, you know, it's the greatest thing in the world or it's, you know, an absolute sellout. Neither of those are true. We're going to kind of give you enough information to get you started. So let's just talk about the history of how this became an argument. You know, every drug goes through studies. And what happened with this particular one is that there was a study that was being done by the manufacturer, and then they stopped the study because they found information in the study that didn't make sense. And so they just stopped that. And then they applied based upon a smaller subset of the data, and it was approved. So let's talk about first what happened. So there are actually three studies, and those were numbered 103, 301, and 302. 103, the first study, was just an A-B comparison of whether using the drug or not using the drug had any effect on somebody with Alzheimer's. And if you don't understand the drug, there's plenty of places to find it. I'll give you a real quick synopsis. It is supposed to reduce the buildup of plaques in your brain that keep your brain from, or that deteriorate your brain.
Now, is it supposed to reduce or stop them from continuing to grow?
Because the best we've got is it reduces the buildup. It doesn't reduce the existing plaques at all. So we're not talking about making any improvements. We're talking about possibly slowing the progression of Alzheimer's. Okay, that's the wonder part of this drug, is that it may slow the progression of Alzheimer's.
So wherever you are today,
right,
it might slow from this point forward, but it won't improve. And they made a futility decision on that. I thought that was an interesting
right. And the futility decision was that they did a low dose test, you know, an A-B comparison between using the drug and not using the drug, and they saw an improvement. And then they said, okay, so now let's do another round of tests and look at a low dose versus a higher dose and see if there was a difference. And what happened, and this is where, you know, it all got mixed up. They had two separate tests, 301 and 302. 301 showed that there was a reduced benefit in a high dose by a significant amount. In fact, there was it was an anomaly. Let's put some numbers out there. We don't want to get too bound up in the statistics, but we're looking at, with a low dose, they were looking at some effect on 10% of the recipients, okay? And that effect was that there was a slight reduction in the amount of the loss of capability.
Yeah. Now, so I think it's really important to emphasize what you're saying. So when you say improvement, not improvement from your current condition, but improving the rate at which you are declining.
Right.
So improvement in the rate of decline, not improvement in the rate from your current position.
Right.
That's what the test was.
If we were to take somebody today who has Alzheimer's, and then we measured them, and this was a 78-week, a year and a half, effectively, time frame that they did this test. And for people that saw some improvement, their improvement was about 10% over the people who didn't use the drug at all. And by that means, again, they didn't decline quite as quickly.
The progression slowed.
So if we use the drug, just saying, okay, so we're gonna lower the slope a little bit. We're going to make it a little slower going downhill. We're still going to be going downhill. What the goal of the second round of testing was to, well, if we increase the dose, do we increase the effectiveness, basically even leveling the slope further? And that was where the problem came up with the testing, because they had two different sets of tests. The first test showed that the decline actually increased, while the second test showed that it decreased, and which was what they were hoping for. So then they stopped the study. They said, wait a minute, this data is so far off that there's no way that we can, you know, come up with anything. We have to figure out why. And they went through all the reasons of why it was, you know, it might have been an anomaly. So the FDA has requested that this company do a follow-up test to determine this higher level. But, and this, these are some of the arguments that people are making, they're not required to do that for 9 years. Okay. Now, if we follow some of the hype, this is going to be a great thing, and people get on and use this product for 9 years, and then they find out that, no, it didn't really do a lot, that's $56,000 a year per person that we didn't accomplish anything. And that's really where the question is. Will it reduce the decline a little bit for people? The first two studies, the first and the third study, show that may be the case. The middle study also shows that there'll be a slight slight change in the decline, but there is no good evidence that it will have a great effect on great amounts. So let's say that we were looking at a small dose having a 10% improvement, and then they were going to do this larger dose, and maybe it was going to get a 25% improvement. Well, we're starting to see a trend here. So then they do a third round, and they increase the dose even further to see if they got to 50% better outcomes. You know, and maybe we'll just take this, you know, to the extreme. Let's say that you could take a big enough dose that you would have 100% success rate, which would just mean that people would stay exactly where they are at their Alzheimer's levels. That would be the absolute top goal of this, which we're probably not going to achieve. So the question really has to be, is this an interesting drug? It is, because it may have an effect, and we'll know more in the future as to how well it does in doing that. And if it does help to decrease the effect of Alzheimer's over time, then it's a starting point to some more conversations about how else to change it. Will it improve anybody who has Alzheimer's? No, that's not even on the table or in the discussions. You're not going to get any improvement from this. At best, you're going to see a slightly slower decline. And that brings us to a very difficult question, and that is, so is that better? And everybody gets to make that decision for themselves. And we, you know, we're presenting this not because we're saying don't use the drug or use the drug. We're presenting it so that everybody can be better informed and make a better decision. And when it comes to all of our declining conditions, we probably need to consider what is that point where we want to try and, hold on, or the time that we say, okay, we don't want to pursue this anymore. You know, with some cancers, when you're taking chemotherapy, sometimes the chemotherapy is so overwhelmingly debilitating that it may not be worth going through that with the probability that there's not going to be a true benefit at the end. And that's a decision that everybody should make for themselves. And we encourage you to give thought to those things before they become real today, so that you aren't blindsided by the information and you aren't making decisions that aren't based upon what you really want. And we also recommend that you share that information with your family, because Alzheimer's, for instance, at some point, if you're suffering from that, you may not be in a position where you can tell your family, no, I don't want to be in the state where I don't know everybody. Even if you could get 100% effectiveness out of this drug and you kept me right at I don't know anybody, and every morning I wake up in terror because I don't know where I'm at, I don't think that's a better...
Well, I think that's really important to make that decision up front. And that's not normally something that they list on, say, the Utah Advanced Directives. They have lots of little prompting questions, but they never really prompt on, they do prompt on, do you want heroic measures? Do you want this? Do you want that? But they don't say, if you had Alzheimer's, do you want your kids to slow that down, or do you want nature to take its course? And I think that different people will have different choices about that. But as a child or a loved one, there's a lot of guilt in making the decision to allow nature to take its course. You sometimes feel obligated to do all that you can, even though it's really hard in that position to step back and say, does my mom or dad have a quality of life? Because you just feel this sense of necessity or obligation to extend it, whatever the condition is. But if you were that person, where would you want it to go? Would you want to linger for, an unspecified period of time? Or are there certain benchmarks at the point that you're, urinary and bowel incontinent, or you don't recognize your family? Do you stop measures? You know, it's all those questions that you hate to say it, but you must discuss it.
If you're in just chronic pain and every moment is agony, and the only way you avoid that is by sleeping, is that a better solution? And again, we're not trying to encourage anybody to make a decision in either way.
Just to contemplate.
Just to be informed. Right. Be your best medical advocate so that you know. And then have those conversations with friends and family so that they know. This is Pathway Hospice and Palliative Care. Our telephone number, 435-477-6999.
Have a great week, everybody.